From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
They come to the final 16. Good Magic on the outside is second. Audible third toward the inside. Then it's Still Regard. They're coming to the wire. He's just awesome. Justify has won the Kentucky Derby.
Good Magic with the lead. Flame Away giving everything he's got, but second. Sporting Chance third. Free Drop Billy in fourth. Linden Citizen fifth. Good Magic to the front of the field in the Toyota Bluegrass.
From our Jimmy John's of Lexington Studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
It's Lone Seller, Noble Indy, My Boy Jack, for the rail, Noble Indy and Lone Seller, Noble Indy, to win the Louisiana Derby.
Oh, what a wood this is. It is Vino Rosso in front. Enticed continues to battle him, but Vino Rosso's getting away. Restoring Hope is third. Vino Rosso, Fantastico, in the Wood Memorial.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Acacia Courtney.
Hello, everyone. Good morning and welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, joined this morning by the lovely and ultra-talented Acacia Courtney, who is sitting in for Jude. And we are positioned literally from the rail to your radio. We are about 10 feet away from the rail at Woodbine here in Toronto, Canada, on this Queen's Plate Day, the third consecutive year that we've made the pilgrimage north of the border to bring you coverage of what is considered to be Canada's version of the Kentucky Derby. And that comes up later this afternoon at 5:36 Eastern Time, our coverage 4 to 6 Eastern here on the network. What a day it is here in Toronto. We are under powder blue skies, just a few wispy clouds making their way by from time to time, but it is clear and it is going to be hot here in Toronto today. Temperature is expected to be in the mid-90s as we edge closer to post time. And Acacia, first of all, who on earth would have thought that today, sitting here in Toronto, it would be about 10 degrees hotter than it's going to be at Gulfstream for the Summit of Speed program in South Florida?
It really is kind of crazy. And this is actually my first time making it up to Woodbine, as well as, of course, to the Queen's Plate. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And you mentioned the fact that we're just about 10 feet away from the rail, which we are. And Woodbine is unique in that the turf course, that big, long stretch, the expansive turns, is on the outside. And the Tapeta track is on the inside. So we're actually just a few feet away from the turf course itself, which is looking absolutely beautiful this morning. And as you said, it's a big day of racing at many tracks, including down at Gulfstream Park. There's a Breeders' Cup winning your in race there as well in the Princess Rooney. There's also the Smile Sprint. So lots of big stuff going on, but just so thrilled to be here.
Yeah, the Breeders' Cup, of course, coming up in early November at Churchill Downs. We have a Breeders' Cup winning your in prior to the Queen's Plate here at Woodbine today, and that's the Grade 1 Highlander. It's a win and you're in for the Turf Sprint. Acacia mentioned that big one in South Florida, the Princess Rooney, a win and you're in for the Philly and Mare Sprint division. And Acacia, back to the way that this racetrack is set up for a minute. You talk about the turf course, which, by the way, is so pristine. It is. I described it as looking more like Augusta National than a racetrack turf course, right? Is that accurate?
It's true. It looks absolutely perfect. And they are actually building an inside turf course. So if you're on the grounds at Woodbine this weekend, you'll get a little bit of a glimpse of that. Really, along the front side, they have laid down some of the grass for the inner turf course, which of course will be much tighter. But one of the things, and I was talking about this with somebody yesterday, and I touched on this earlier, the very long stretch, the big turns, the just pristine nature of this turf course here at Woodbine, it's really very impressive to see in person.
Almost Belmont Park. Like.
It is.
Not quite to that level, but yeah, if you were going to draw a parallel to a track back in the United States, this may be the one. And yet, a second turf course that they are building is going to be spectacular, and it's going to allow Woodbine to have a little more flexibility with their racing programs, too, and to do some different things. We talk about the main turf course here, which is, again, about 10 feet away from us. This turf course is one of the best in the world, and then when they get that second one put together, and it's going to be just as nice as the main one, it's going to be spectacular here in Woodbine.
And you've seen the sprinklers watering it over the last couple of days. And with the temperatures, I've heard many people being pretty eager to kind of run out onto that new turf course and maybe take a run through those sprinklers.
Yeah, it's been warm, and it's only going to get warmer later today. As we told you, temperatures expected to be in the mid-90s. That, You know, that is a bit of a concern, looking ahead to the Queen's Plate. Now, the Queen's Plate is run on the Tapeda surface here, the main track, if you will, here at Woodbine. And yesterday, Ken Ramsey arrived. He actually got to the paddock just in time for the fourth race, which he had a horse entered in the race. He came rolling into the Woodbine paddock, suitcase and all. He had his Ramsey red suitcase, was pulling it behind him, ran over to see his horse as he was getting ready to be saddled. And that horse ended up suffering a heat stroke. He was okay. He's going to be fine. But had a heat stroke because of the warm conditions. And Ken had sent me a text last night, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he said that the temperature on the Tapeda surface, coming up off the Tapeda surface, was about 110 degrees yesterday. And it's going to be hotter today.
It is going to be hotter today. And speaking to Keith McCalmont from Woodbine, he said one thing that they might do is in the saddling area where they have the enclosed stalls before they go out into the open paddock before coming onto the track for the post parade. When it's so hot like this, they will probably keep the horses inside that those saddling stalls a little bit longer where they have fans, they have hoses, it's covered, it's much cooler in there so that they make sure that safety, of course, is the priority. But yes, it was very, very warm yesterday, and the sun is very strong. So we'll be looking to load up on the sunscreen today and get quite a bit of water. And I know that, obviously, the safety of our equine athletes is a priority as well.
Yeah, no doubt. They will take every precaution to make sure that both the equine and the human stars that we'll see later today are safe here at Woodbine. You look at the Queen's Plate field this year. Mm-hmm. 16 very talented Canadian-bred three-year-olds are set to go. Telekinesis, one of three horses from the barn of Canadian Hall of Fame trainer Mark Cassie, the morning line favorite. This is a wide-open group, though. I mean, I don't know if you have a superstar among this field. I guess that would still be yet to be determined when we see what they do after they roll through the Queen's Plate here. But, a couple of fillies, very talented runners with Wonder Godot, another Cassie trainee. You have Dixie Moon from the barn of Catherine Day Phillips. This is a really solid and well-matched field.
It really is, and I think that that's what makes it so exciting, too, is that there's no kind of one horse that everybody really seems to be narrowing in on. You hear a lot of differing opinions. You see the advantage if you're playing the race to maybe get some prices in as well, which I certainly like. And you mentioned the fillies, and fillies have actually been very successful historically in the Queen's Plate. In fact, 36 winners have been fillies since 1860, eight since 1956. So it's been pretty fun, including last year's with Holy Helena, who we'll see again today this afternoon for trainer Jimmy Jerkins. And Dixie Moon is actually the most accomplished horse in the race. She has four wins. She has the most wins of anybody in the race.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's a good field. 5:36 Eastern is the post. Our coverage comes your way 4 to 6 this afternoon. You can tune in on a different SiriusXM channel than you're listening to now. That's SiriusXM 93. You can also stream us worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. 4 to 6 Eastern time, and all that coverage presented by our friends at Hillendale Farms. So our thanks to John Sakura and the entire team for their support of this broadcast coming up later this afternoon. The Queen's Plate, the first leg of the Canadian Triple Crown, and after they come through this mile-and-a-quarter race here on the Tapeda surface, they will head to Fort Erie to contest the Prince of Wales Stakes, which is just about a month or so away, and that's a mile and 3/16 on the dirt, and then they come back here to Woodbine again for the final leg of the Triple Crown. That's a mile and a half on turf in mid-August. It's the Breeder Stakes, so much like the American Triple Crown, the distances are the same. The surface is completely different for all three races.
Yeah, so it really is really the testament of the champion. You know, you talk about the American Triple Crown, how the distances get progressively longer. There's different tracks. There's travel involved. It's three very tough races in a relatively short amount of time.
Yep.
And up here in Canada, you have to be able to run on three different surfaces. And I think we see a lot of versatility in this field, too. And that's one of the really most interesting things about it, because obviously this series, the prestige of the Queen's Plate, you see horses pointing maybe just to this one race, but you don't know where they might end up and perhaps what surface they might end up being stars on.
If you think the American Triple Crown is difficult to win, and it is, justified becoming just the 13th horse to do it earlier this year, only 7 horses have ever been able to sweep the Canadian version of the Triple Crown, the last to do it, Wando, in 2003. So we'll see if That is in the cards this year for whoever wins the Queen's Plate, but they have to pass this test first. And again, that comes your way later this afternoon at 5:36 Eastern Time. All right, here's what's ahead over the course of the next 2 hours this morning. Going to be a very busy show. Plenty of Queen's Plate talk. We'll try to also touch on the Princess Rooney for you down at Gulfstream Park. John Sakura is going to join us here in just a little bit. He is the president of Hillandale. As we told you, all of our coverage presented by Hillandale this afternoon. So John will join us right around 8:15 to talk about that phenomenal operation and everything that he's been able to accomplish at Hillandale. Jim Lawson is the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment. He'll be with us in person. He'll stop by right around 8:35 Eastern Time. Rick Belaz is the president and general manager of Samson Farm. And if you're any kind of racing fan, you know the name Samson Farm. They've had so much success, not only here in Canada, but all over the world. And Rick, the president of that organization, going to be with us coming up later this afternoon, about 9 o'clock Eastern. They have won the Queen's Plate on 5 different occasions, has Samson. They'll be looking for number 6 this year with a couple of runners, both trained by Graham Motion. Sandy Hawley, the Hall of Fame jockey who has won 4 renewals of the Queen's Plate. He'll be with us right about 9:20 Eastern Time. And then at the end of the show, you'll hear my one-on-one interview with Frank Stronach talking about racing here in Canada and what the Queen's Plate means to him. Of course, he has a couple more runners in this year's edition. So you'll hear from Frank, and you'll hear from trainer Mark Cassie, who has 3 horses going to the post, including the favorite and maybe even the second favorite as well. He is loaded in this year's Queen's Plate. All right, so a lot of things to get to, Acacia. It's going to be a busy morning.
Very busy morning. And even just as you run down who we have on the show today, I mean, it even goes back to what we were talking about, being such a competitive version of the Queen's Plate. But it's also an incredibly historic version of the Queen's Plate as well, with the presence of Samson Farm, Stronach Stables, Mark Cassie, and everything that he's accomplished here in Canada with 3 runners who all seem to have a shot.
The only thing missing, Roger Atfield.
That's right.
That's the only thing missing from the Queen's Plate this year. No doubt about it. He does not have a runner in this race, which is very, very surprising. But no doubt Roger will be back in the mix next year, I'm sure.
He's got plenty on the undercard.
He's going to be a busy man today, no doubt about it. All right, we'll get to our first break. We'll come back. John Sakura from Hillandale is on the other side of this. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Brody's Cause, a Grade 1 winner at 2 and 3.
Brody's Cause and Corey Lannery, a tremendous run from deep in the pack to pull the upset in the Claiborne Breeders' Futurity.
His final running time of 143.27 in the Breeders' Futurity was the fastest running on dirt since 2000, while defeating Grade 1 winner Exaggerator by Sire of Sires Giants Causeway and bred just like worldwide leading sire Shamardal. Brody's Cause, standing at Spendthrift.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Have you been looking for high-quality, consistent, and palatable hay, along with a company that offers personal service and attention? Well, your search is over. Washington Hay Company has been feeding your dream for more than 25 years with only the highest quality hay. Their 3-tie red, white, and blue string certifies their hay is grown in Washington State's Ellensburg Valley. And with delivery to Keeneland, Churchill Downs, and farms in central Kentucky, Washington Hay Company is feeding your dream. Call Brad Green at 859-588-5480.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And down in the center, Kitten's Boy, and ahead by a sentry trying to come over the top of them and deciding to now switch course. And Nipawa, Cooler Mike, tackled by ahead by a sentry. And Kitten's Boy, ahead by a sentry's just burst on by and has got the Coronation Futurity in the bag. Ahead by a sentry wins well. And Dixie Moon, the wonder catch, a furlong to run. She's out in front. 2.5 lengths to Strike Me Down. Down the outside, Rose's Vision. Strike Me Down is mustering a late charge. And the leader, Dixie Moon. Dixie Moon's going to see it out. Wins the Cup and Saucer by a length.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Acacia Courtney, we are with you trackside at Woodbine in Toronto, getting set for the 159th running of the Queen's Plate, which comes up later this afternoon, post time 5:36 Eastern. If you are just tuning in, it is going to be a warm afternoon here in the Toronto area. Temperatures expected to be in the mid-90s, and the heat index even higher than that. So keep that in mind as you're getting ready for this Queen's Plate Day. Going to be hotter here in Toronto than it will be at Gulfstream in South Florida for their Summit of Speed program. Simply remarkable. Looking ahead to what's coming up this afternoon, our coverage 4 to 6 Eastern time, all that Queen's Plate coverage presented by our friends at Hillendale Farms. And John Sakura, the man behind Hillendale, he is with us now here on the Equine Forum. John, good morning. Happy Queen's Plate Day, my friend.
For having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And looking forward to the coverage this afternoon. And thank you again for helping to make that all possible. But, John, as somebody who is a Canadian, born and raised, talk to me about what this day means to Canada and to Canadian racing.
You know, I think it's important on many fronts. From specifically a horse racing point of view, it's been, you know, such a great traditional race. It's the Canadian version of the Kentucky Derby. It's an aspiration that everybody that's ever owned a horse has in Canada, is to win the Queen's Plate. You have the tie-in with the royal family. You have tradition. You have the purse. You have, you know, so many great horses that have won it in the past. So it's certainly a, you know, the focal point in the calendar. And it's, as I said, the our equivalent of the Kentucky Derby. So thrilled to be part of it. We're fortunate that we have bred a Queen's Plate winner. We also have bred a Canadian Oaks winner. So those are, you know, those are, you know, like the Derby and Oaks of Canada. So I'm thrilled to see that, you know, beyond just the specific importance of the race itself, it's really now becoming a cultural event, significant event on, you know, the calendar for all of Canadians. And you know, I really think that there's enormous growth potential to have, you know, a huge festival. And I think that Woodbine Entertainment has done a great job. They're introducing concerts and, you know, contests on, you know, the way people dress. And I think it's exponentially growing in sort of the awareness of everybody in Ontario and throughout Canada. So that's very exciting for our sport.
You know, John, so often when we lead up to the Kentucky Derby, I'll talk to trainers or owners or jockeys, and they'll talk about, you know, growing up watching the Kentucky Derby. And a lot of times they'll say that's what got them hooked on racing. As somebody who grew up here in Canada, was this the race, the Queen's Plate, that you paid pretty close attention to as a child?
Absolutely. You know, it wasn't necessarily the genesis for my interest in the business, but the Queen's Plate was always considered, you know, the premier event in Canada. And, you know, a $1 million purse, no matter what the currency, is significant. The industry has faced some challenges over, you know, the past, you know, 5-6 years with the changing arrangements of the slot machines at the racetrack and other events. So it's always great to see something positive, to see a tradition that is sort of bulletproof and you know, was never eroded. It was always a fixture, and you know, we have a business of great tradition. And when you have a race that's longstanding, that important horses have won, and that everybody can put aside their differences and focus on a great race, you know, in the one day, it's very significant. It sort of reminds me also, you know, like of the Canadian International, which has changed names a couple of times. But I remember as a kid watching, you know, that race, the International, the E.P. Taylor, and, you know, great racing families and great trainers like, you know, Alec Head and leading English trainers would send over their best horses. So, you know, there's three or four events that make, you know, Canadian racing on par with really racing anywhere in North America or possibly the world, and certainly the Queen's Plate for a you know, Fulton in Canada race is without equal.
And John, you talked a lot about the tradition and the whole event, and even for myself being here for the first time, there really is just such a pageantry about it, that it really is such a big day, a big celebration, and not just about the racing, even though that is such a huge part of it. For you, I know you said you've bred a Queen's Plate winner, so I imagine that would be a highlight. But looking back on some of the renditions of the race, and it has been won by some important horses, what have been some of the highlights for you? What are some of the past Queen's Plates that stand out in your memory?
You know, I don't know if there's a specific Queen's Plate that I remember, but you know, the lead up to the race, and you know, when I was living in Ontario, that was my version of the Kentucky Derby, and you know, looking at Queen's Plate odds, future odds ahead of time, and trainers getting horses ready for their plate and identifying them and sort of following that whole process was I mean, it was really captivating. It was the one time where racing, you know, had a, you know, in Canada, hockey is the premier sport. So it was like the Stanley Cup, or it was like any culminating event. So there were a lot of interest from, you know, the beginning, and the horse would break their maiden or win a stake, and they'd start talking about the Queen's Plate. Will he get the trip? I remember Frank Merrill famously had a horse called Greek Answer, and he was a very fast two-year-old. And he did something, I'm trying to think exactly what it was, in apparatus. He put, like, eucalyptus cotton balls in the horse's nose to try to expand his lungs, and would the horse get the trip, and, you know, all kinds of nuances and different ways to get there, and could a filly win the plate and beat colts, and you know, there's been great fillies that have won the race. I think La Lorgnette won the race, and we're fortunate enough to buy her dam. I think the year after she won the Queen's Plate. So, you know, it's a great equalizer that many fillies have competed successfully. I'll have to throw a pitch in here for Curlin. The Curlin filly runs today, and I hope she runs very well. She was an Oaks winner. It's a tough race, but you know, much like Europe, the fillies have been successful in the plate, and Samson's had great luck, and you know, a lot of traditional racing families that have been very prominent. John Louis Levesque, who's no longer with us, it's great to see those powerhouse stables, and I remember that as a kid so vividly, that you know, they always had two or three contenders every year. So it's a race that you know, I follow very closely.
Talking with John Sakura from Hillendale Farms here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And John mentions the filly by Curlin, who was in the race today. That is Dixie Moon, trained by Catherine Day Phillips. We had a chance to swing by the barn yesterday, had a photo op with Dixie Moon. She is a sweetheart, and looking forward to seeing her do her thing later this afternoon. John, you talk about breeding a Queen's Plate winner. There's a chance that after 5:36 Eastern today, we could be talking about you breeding another Queen's Plate winner, as Ahead by a Century goes to the post in here. He is a son of your stallion Midnight Loot, and another horse that's been knocking on the door in some big races, and on his day, he could very easily be the one to win this one later today.
Yeah, I mean, that horse was bred by my brother. Not myself, but certainly I'd be cheering for that horse, primarily for my brother, and then secondly, for Midnight Loot. Midnight Loot's a very, very good sire, so sired multiple Grade 1 winners. He has a filly running in New York, Midnight Basu, in the Grade 1 today. So it could be a great afternoon for Midnight Loot. We're active on all fronts. You know, McLean's Music and Theros both have very good chances in Sunshine Million races. And, you know, Curlin Philly in the plate and the Midnight Loot cold in the plate. So lots of participants and important races throughout the country. And I told my boys the other day we need to go to the Queen's Plate next year because it's an event I feel strongly about. It's one, as I said earlier, that's really growing in significance where, you know, you have casual fans. And, you know, and then a lot of this business, which people don't probably pay enough attention to, while the focus on gambling and we need gambling and you know, development of wagering, that's our handle and that funds our business. The casual fan that just comes to the races and has a good time, you know, a percentage of those people will then delve further to say, gee, what is this business all about? You know, not to sound sexist, but, you know, women love horses. And, you know, when you bring your wife, your girlfriend, a friend to the races and, you know, they like it, it can be a real family event too. You know, your kids like it, your wife likes it, you like it. Everybody's happy. For me, it's the greatest sport in the game. And these, you know, boutique events, these social events combined with racing seem to be the way racing is trending. Those are the meets that are the best attended, you know, the Del Mar's, Keeneland, those type of events, and Woodbine and the Queen's Plate certainly fit into that mold, and it's a great profile for Woodbine Racing.
Yeah, John, well said. I don't know if I could have said it any better myself. Well put. We'll remind people, before I let you go, I know you have a busy day, so I don't want to keep you too long, but we'll remind people that the sales season is fast approaching, and Hillandale has established, well, four new record prices at public auction, including that $14 million price for Better Than Honor, and you have had so much success with those sales consignments over the years, so we'll encourage everybody to head over to the Hillandale consignments at Fasig Tipton and Keeneland and all the auctions coming up throughout the summer. So, John, really do appreciate all the support of our coverage this afternoon. Again, 4 to 6 Eastern, Sirius XM 93, and streaming worldwide to 160-plus countries on our website, horseracingradio.net. John, thanks, my friend. Good luck today. Go get it done.
Great. Thanks for having us, and thanks for supporting the race. Thanks for bringing it into, you know, prominence and significance beyond the borders of Ontario. It's a great message, the resurgence of Canadian racing. This is a great day, and I hope it's a cleanly run, great race, and may the best horse win.
Excellent. Thanks, John. Appreciate it, and
thank you, John.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. John Sakura, like all of our guests who appear on the program, will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Embrace your passion and wear what you love at embracetherace.com. I'm sporting my Embrace the Race cap. Did you see that?
I did see that. I love it. I have a beautiful Embrace the Race necklace, actually.
Their ties are spectacular, too. They send a lot of really ties great out. They're just absolutely gorgeous. John Sakura.
Yeah.
You heard him talk about his brother breeding ahead by a century, who is number 15 in today's 16-horse Queen's Plate. And then you have Dixie Moon, a son of his stallion, Curlin, who he needs no introduction. Curlin has been spectacular. Dixie Moon. We had a chance to see her yesterday, and she looked great.
She did look really great. I think she's got a really big shot today. And he mentioned Cantharos as well. He's got XY Jet, who's by Cantharos, running in the Smile down at Gulfstream today as well. So you really see a versatility in the stallion roster from Hillandale and success in many different facets. You've got the sprint races down at Gulfstream where he's represented with Cantharos, and then you've got the likes of Curlin going a distance race in a real prestigious race like the Queen's Plate today.
All right, we are going to step away for our Lexus Legends of the Turf segment, brought to you every single Saturday at this time by the Lexus store of Lexington. When we come back, Jim Lawson, the CEO of Woodbine, will be here with us in person. Stay tuned for that. You don't want to miss it. This is your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
This is the story of one of the once-living legends of the American turf who, unhappily to relate, outlived his legendary status into an ever-lengthening twilight of economic hardship and poor health, and who, at the age of 69 in a Jacksonville, Oregon nursing home, met the Grim Reaper after a prolonged illness on August 16, 1968. For many years, he had been a hanger-on at New York racetracks, waiting for that one more chance which never came, and dreaming of the glory of the 1920s when he was, quite literally, the toast of Broadway. In that golden age of sport, he was to thoroughbred racing what Babe Ruth was to baseball, Bobby Jones to golf, Bill Tilden to tennis, Red Grange to football, Jack Dempsey to boxing, and Johnny Weissmuller to swimming. Each was the symbol and the very epitome of their particular sport, their names household words. He first saw the light of day, did our man of the day, so to speak, in Groton, South Dakota, in November 13, 1898, of Norwegian ancestry, and he grew up on a ranch in American Falls, Idaho, where he took to riding horses as naturally as the proverbial duck takes to water. He rode his first official race on January 25, 1918, and won, the first of 968 wins in over 3,600 mounts, who earned nearly $3 million, an enormous amount in that day and age. His lifetime winning percentage was 26%, remarkable. In 1919, his contract was purchased by Commander J.K.L. Ross, for whose Canadian-based stable he rode such stars as Milkmaid, Billy Kelly, and Sir Barton. He later rode for Harry Sinclair's Rancoca stable, and it was in the silks of this stable that his star shot across the heavens of thoroughbred racing with meteoric rapidity. He led the jockey list with Money One in 1921, the year he won the Belmont aboard Grey Lag. And in 1923, the year he won the Derby and Belmont with a leg up on John E. Madden's Zev. His 1923 records of 39 stakes wins and nearly $570,000 in purses were to stand as riding records for more than 20 years. He had a nasty spill at Saratoga in 1924 and a gallstone operation as well, sidelining him for some 8 months. He had trouble getting mounts on his return to the saddle, but to get the mount on Flying Ebony in the Derby, he did, and he won in the slop on that one at Churchill. That same year, he won the Belmont while aboard Mad Play. In 1927, he won the Belmont on Chance Shot for owner Joseph Widener, president of Belmont Park. It was largely under Widener's aegis that he was restored to good standing in March of 1928, after he had been suspended and banned from all tracks in the fall of 1927 for his ride on Bateau in the Pimlico Futurity. In spite of that suspension, he was a leading money-winning rider of 1927. After reinstatement, he had the stomach and weight problems, and he subsequently hung up his tack, as it were, to race and train horses. He encountered financial difficulty in that venture and ultimately bowed to creditors by dispersing his stable in 1929. He came out of retirement to ride for William Woodward Sr. in 1930. That year, he was aboard Gallant Fox, who chalked up a triple crown. That year's win in the Belmont was his fifth in that event. Both rider and horse retired in 1931. Our man came out of retirement for a second time to ride in 1932, chalking up 13 wins. And then, final retirement and the beginning of a long road to abject obscurity. He refused all offers to ride in Europe, and had a brief fling as a chanteur at the Stork Club in New York, plus a stint in radio and as a movie producer, none of those with success. In 1938, when back in the game as a trainer, he saddled stagehand for wins in both the Santa Anita Derby and the Santa Anita Handicap. He was that season's leading money-winning trainer. In 1944, he turned to breeding, but that proved to be a disastrous venture. He once said, quote, "Money and me are incompatible." In 1953, at the age of 55, he got himself down to riding weight and had 10 mounts and won one of those. That victory, to phenomenal acclaim, I might add, was at the old Jamaica racetrack on Long Island, October 14, 1953. The effort to make weight had taken its toll, and from then on until he left New York for Oregon, he lived in a donated room over a Long Island restaurant, eating with friends who relived his past glories. The story of this paragon of saddlesmiths, replete with its ecstasies and agonies, its apogees and perigees, its zeniths and its nadirs of human accomplishment and endeavor, as though reaching out for that one final straw of recognition, is indeed a most sad commentary. It does not detract one single scintilla from the composite accomplishment of this man, accomplishments which stamped him indelibly in giant letters on the pages of racing lore. Our subject of this dissertation was immortalized through the pen of Damon Runyon in the 1920s. Runyon, often watching him ride Pendant Oud in testimony to this man titled, A Guy Named Sandy. He was Earl Sandy.
Lexus, once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
Freak yeah, Jimmy John's.
Freak yeah, what if I just needed one sandwich delivered?
Freak yeah, we can do that.
What about 100 sandwiches?
Freak yeah, we can do that.
What about 24 sandwiches?
Freak yeah, we can do that.
67 sandwiches?
Freak yeah, we can do that.
You know, 67's a prime number.
Freak yeah, a whole number greater than one whose only factors are one in itself, I know.
Great. I'll take one Turkey Tom, please.
Freak yeah, one Turkey Tom, on the way.
Freaky fresh, freaky fast, Jimmy John's, freak yeah.
Denali Stud, led by 2015 Farm Manager of the Year Gary Bush, and Donnie Snellings, regarded as one of the best yearling managers in Kentucky. In recent years, Denali has raised Grade 1 standouts Animal Kingdom, Taprit, Her Eminency, and Hawkish, while consigning Grade 1 winners Constellation, V.E. Day, and Bolt Doro. Consistently a top 5 consigner, Denali has sold a $1 million horse at the Saratoga sale 3 years running, and the sale topper in 2 of those years. Denali Stud, a proud tradition of attention to detail and raising and selling Saturday afternoon horses. Adina Spring Stallion, Point of Entry.
Point of Entry scores to win the Man of War by 4 lengths.
A 5-time Grade 1 winner, viewed by many to be the heir to Dynaformer's global legacy.
Wild final furlong coming here in the Sword Dancer, and here comes Point of Entry, who's running to daylight.
The first horse since Theatrical to win the New York Turf Triple Crown, accomplishing the feat by a combined 9 lengths.
And they're coming down to the finish. And Point of Entry will go to the Breeders' Cup on a 5-race winning streak.
Point of Entry hails from a remarkable female family, with his first 4 dams Grade 1 winners and or producers. Now with winners in 6 countries on all surfaces from 5.5 to 10 furlongs, including the sensational multiple graded stakes winner, Analyze It. And his second crop is off and running, with several promising juvenile winners already in 2018. The heir to Dynaformer and the next global sire is Point of Entry, standing at Adina Springs.
My name is Abel Escanos. Listen to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
As they hit the corner, Paul, it is Wando leading them over to the top of the stretch. Patrick Husbands asks him for his heart, and he opens up. It is Wando by 6 into the lane. Mobile to the inside. Rock again on the outside. Final furlong. It is all Wando. Sharp, strong, and a dominating winner of the Queen's Plate. Wando, simply spectacular.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Acacia Courtney, literally coming to you from the rail to your radio. We are 10 feet from the turf course here at Woodbine, which is positioned on the outside of the main Tapeta Racing surface, and then to the inside of that, a third course, which is now going to be a brand new turf course. It is under construction. It is going to be spectacular when it is finished. And if you stand at the winner's circle here at Woodbine and you look straight across all three courses, you see three finish lines in a row, and that is simply spectacular. It is one of the neat features that makes Woodbine so unique and so special. And we are here for the Queen's Plate. You just heard Dan Loisel with the call of the 2003 running of the plate. That was Wando, the last horse to sweep Canada's Triple Crown, and he did it with style here at Woodbine that afternoon, and really he was so, so special throughout all three of those races. Joined now by Jim Lawson, who is the CEO of Woodbine Entertainment. He is also the chairman of both the, well, Ontario Racing and the Canadian Football League, and he is one of the biggest Brad Paisley groupies you're ever going to meet in your entire life. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. Great to be on. And I'm just recovering from at the Brad Paisley concert last night. But great to join you guys this morning.
What a great show he put on last night.
Oh, unbelievable. He always puts on a great show, and he does a great job wherever he goes of giving shout-outs, and great shout-outs to Canada and Tim Hortons, and he did his homework before he got here, so it was a lot of fun.
He did. He actually signed one of his guitars after he drew a maple leaf on it. Then he autographed it, and he gave it to a little boy who was sitting there in the front row. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it was fun. He pleases the crowd, and it was just a spectacular evening.
You were among a small group that was up on stage, positioned right behind Brad, looking out toward the crowd. What was that like?
It was fun. It was really interesting to see the interaction between the various band members and Brad and his band members, just little hand signals on what they were doing. You don't normally see that from the crowd, but it was really exciting to be up that close to just seeing how they communicate and the odd look, like don't do that or don't do that, and people are trying to give him guitars and he's shooing them off. It was really fun, things you normally wouldn't see.
And it was packed last night too. I mean, the crowd was electric. That had to be awesome to see everybody coming out for the concert and just the whole atmosphere last night.
Yeah, it was just an open air, warm night. I don't know if the full moon. Uh-huh. It was just like, wow, it doesn't get any better than this.
Thank you for the hospitality too. We were in the Lex's tent, which was right by the stage. It was tremendous. Perfect. It was a wonderful night. So thank you for that. And thank you for having us back here again. The third consecutive year we've been here for the Queen's Plate.
We're excited to have you here. Keep coming back. It's just going to keep getting better here.
John Sakura from Hillendale Farms joined us in the first portion of the program. And he was talking about what this day means to Canada and Canadian racing and Woodbine in particular. What does it mean to you when you think about Queen's Plate Day here in the country?
Well, I think it's all about heritage and history. I mean, it's so exciting to bring everyone together and put racing on a pedestal for a day and showcase it. And we struggle at times to get mainstream media following horse racing, and it's that time where we can say, hey, look at what this is all about, the great sport, the entertainment, and we, like everyone else, are chasing that new crowd and trying to bring new fans to racing, and it's a chance to do it, and shame on us if we don't do it well, but I think we're doing it really well at Woodbine.
It certainly seems to be that you found a really great marriage in honoring the history of what the Queen's Plate is about, but also adding new things. I mean, tell us a little bit about anything that's new or different that we might be seeing this year.
Well, this year, I think it's really a case of just expanding upon themes and making the Hats and Horseshoes party better, the concerts, the headliner concerts. We invested a lot in Brad Paisley. He doesn't come cheap. But the whole idea is to just get as many people out here as possible. We have another great band tonight, Sam Roberts, who's a popular band player. We've done a great job with our card, just making sure we have big fields. So we'll start Monday morning analyzing what we did right and what we did wrong, and making it better next year. And there are little tweaks every year, and I think that it's just a case of just constantly making it better, and we will.
The one big change this year was moving the race from its traditional spot on Sunday afternoon back a day to Saturday. Talk about that decision.
Well, it wasn't an easy decision because we were very successful last year. So it was like when we thought about doing it, we said, well, it ain't broke, so don't fix it. Having said that, our wagering is generally better on Saturdays when we go, I'll say, head-to-head with the U.S. tracks. Part of that, at least in the fall, not at this time of year, but part of that, I believe, is going up against the NFL on Sundays. So we've certainly started to realize that Saturdays are better racing days for us. One of the hesitations was, can we get the American jockeys up here on a Saturday? Much easier on a Sunday. And, boy, we sure hit the ball out of the park today with the cast of star jockeys that are coming up here. So that's really exciting.
But yeah, you see names like Javier Castellano and John Velasquez. What else do you need?
Doesn't get any better than that.
No, and even the American trainers. Graham Motion is here. We see Mark Cassie, who is Canadian, but he's American-born, but he races a lot here in Canada. We see him come here again with a strong group. And Ken Ramsey, who always loves to make a trip internationally, and especially here to Woodbine, here he is again.
Yeah. No, we're blessed to have not only the great trainers, but the great jocks today. And of course, that'll influence wagering. The U.S. wagering is so important to us, and that's just the feather in our cap to have stars like that come up.
And it seems like there's also the expansion as far as the racing card, but also in social media as well. I've seen so many good things, whether it's promoting the fashion of the Queen's Plate or just the hashtag QP18. It really seems like you've put a lot of effort into expanding on the social scene as well.
We have. I mean, it's a focus. It's as I mentioned earlier, part of the focus for racing generally is to attract that new crowd, new demographic, and the way to market to them is social media. They're not picking up that newspaper anymore, and so we've gone away from traditional media, mainstream media. We do very little print now, or zero print. Television. We used to do a lot of television, and we still do some radio ads, of course, mostly related to the entertainment.
I recommend more radio.
Well, we do, and people are listening to the radio. Yeah. That's for sure. And so we've restricted it to pretty much social media and radio, and that's how people are consuming. And so we focused on that. We've invested a lot in social media influencers, and just to get people out and. That's where we're spending all our time, and it's working.
How do you take that new fan base, the younger demographic, if you will, you get them to the racetrack, how do you then get them interested in the sport and in the wagering side of it? Is that a whole another marketing campaign?
I'm not so sure. It's a great point, and I'm not so sure whether it's marketing. It's, you know, the real challenge is to get them back here. They're going to have a wonderful time here today,
correct.
No question. Between the fashion and even the people watching alone, it's worth worth coming for. I think the real challenge is how do you get them back here, and how do you get them wagering? I mean, wagering in this business are your sales, and. We are working on how to simplify it, wagering. I think we all understand that sitting down with the racing form or the charts is complicated, and a lot of people don't have the attention span. So we're working on new innovations, new wagering. I think this racetrack and our technology and innovation group is cutting edge, and we have to do not so much marketing, but just a better job of communicating and getting people to understand and simplifying wagering for them. And we're working on that, and that's a real strategic goal for us to do that and potentially lead the industry on how to simplify it.
Visiting with Jim Lawson, the CEO here at Woodbine Entertainment, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network, the Equine Forum, all presented by Woodbine here in the month of June. Jim, we touched on this as you were waiting to come on air with us during that last commercial break. Some of the celebrities and stars that we're going to see here at Woodbine this afternoon. Touch on some of those.
Well, there'll be a lot of people, sports celebrities in particular. I'm involved with the Canadian Football League, as you know, and we've got the Hamilton Tiger Cats, who are on a hot streak right now, and a lot of people in the United States right now would associate the Tiger Cats with Johnny Football, Johnny Manziel, and Johnny's scheduled to come today, and their whole team is coming. We've got hockey players. This is a hockey country, and they're a number of them are showing up, and in terms of entertainers, I know Sam Roberts, and there's a new group singing our national anthem today, the Rec Laws, that are really Ooh. Hot in Canada right now. So it'll be a fun day. There'll be a lot of people, and at I'm more out of the sports world, but I know in the fashion world, there's a lot of fashion stars that are showing up here today too, but I can't give you the names
Wait,
off the top of my head.
Don't sell yourself short there. I'm hearing word that we're going to see Top Hat and Tails later.
Top Hat and Tails, Ooh. and it will be a hot day to have Top Hat and Tails on that. That is for sure. But keeping with the tradition, our board members, our management team, we do wear the Top Hat and Tails. And I think that's important. Acacia mentioned earlier about keeping the tradition and the history. And, you know, the marketing team, the events team here said, you know, do we really need the landau and the carriage and all the expense and in effect that comes with that? And I say, guys, you know what? Keep the traditions, because people love tradition. People love history. So you will see the landau and everything when you think for what you've seen in Royal Ascot recently on NBC Sports, you'll see all that here today in full color with the horse guard and with the Royal Landau. And I think it's really important to keep that tradition in sports and in horse racing.
And now, Jim, this is my first time at the Queen's Plate. In fact, my first time to Woodbine. And everything's been wonderful so far. But for somebody that's coming for the first time, whether it's to Woodbine or just for the whole Queen's Plate event, what's like the list of must-do things today?
Well, I think the red carpet, the hats and horseshoes, there's a fashion show. That is really something. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun, and that would be first on my list. I can't get to go to it because I've got other duties today, hosting the representative of the royal family, which is the lieutenant governor, and that too is a tradition, and hopefully soon we'll get some royal family back here. But number one, that. Number two, the food trucks. I mean, we have worked very hard at getting the top food trucks here, so there's going to be great food and drink all day long, and so that would be top of the list. And in terms of the entertainment, there'll be entertainment all day long, but Sam Roberts, who's great, is starting shortly after the plate ends, and it's a fun day all the way around. I wish I could just be a normal person rather than hosting and just enjoy it all, because people have so much fun today. It's a real festival, a good feeling, and it's going to be hot, but the weather's beautiful here today, so we're excited about it.
I'll put you on the spot, and I know you're probably not going to answer this question. Who wins the Queen's Plate? Do you have a pick?
Yeah, I
didn't know if we had to play it down the middle. I didn't know how this was going to work.
No, I answer everything as honestly as I can. I like Mark's filly, Wonder Good Out. I just think his telekinesis, the favorite, might struggle a little bit about, you know, the 16th pole and Johnny V riding the filly. Look out. She's well positioned. It's always, as you know, a lot of these horses, all these horses pretty much are going a mile and a quarter for the first time. Some of them on Tapeta I mean, there's so many variables in a mile and a quarter race this time of year. So anything can happen, of course, but you asked me for my answer, and anyone can win, but I think Mark's filly's going to be tough. Just she'll run a stocking trip. Dixie Moon's not going to get it easy on the front end. Telekinesis isn't going to get it easy on the front end. There's two or three others in there, which I won't name only because it doesn't mean much what I say, but I think if you have to, if I had to pick a winner, it would be the filly. She'll Johnny V will have her in good place, and she'll take a run at them about the eighth pole.
He's the best. Jim Lawson, CEO, Woodbine Entertainment. Jim, again, thank you for having us back here. It's been a delight. One of our favorite trips of the entire year. So really, and I mean that. Thank you so much.
Love having you here. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank
you for everything. Appreciate you having me on.
All right. Thanks. And Jim Lawson, thanks, like all of our guests who appear on the program, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race. Embrace your passion. Wear what you love at EmbraceTheRace.com. We'll get to a break. We'll come back with more. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Power.
Royal Delta, my Miseralia, here is a champion again. Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Passion.
Pioneer of the Nile, fully stretched and keeping Chocolate Candy at bay. And Pioneer of the Nile and Garrett Gomez have won the Santa Anita Derby.
Performance.
She wins it. Amaliant for Mike Smith with a huge run in this grade one.
Gainsway Stallion Empire Maker is back in the USA with his first U.S. crop of yearlings coming to market this year. A champion on the racetrack, Empire Maker won both the Florida Derby and Belmont Stakes on his way to earning nearly $2 million. Now a highly influential sire and producer of 11 Grade 1 winners, including Pioneer of the Nile and Bodemeister, along with four-time Grade 1 winner Emollient and three-time Eclipse champion Royal Delta. Empire Maker, standing at Gainsway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainsway Farm.
I'm visiting with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how are things in the insurance world?
Things are just fine in the insurance business, Mike. I'm grateful for the people who place their trust in Nicholson Insurance Agency to protect their homes, autos, farms, and horses against financial loss. As you know, we represent many insurance companies, so we can choose just the right company for each client at the right price. We welcome each opportunity to provide quality service to our clients.
So having many companies seems important.
Absolutely. Just like in thoroughbred racing and breeding, competition also works for the betterment of the insurance industry. I am constantly impressed with the ways companies respond to consumer demands with new insurance products and services.
Thanks, Joe. For your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. Or visit us on Facebook. You gotta know Joe.
This is Tom Leach for Kentucky Bank's Wealth Management Department. Investing in today's world requires advice that is timely and responsive to your investment needs and objectives. At Kentucky Bank, we strive to provide you with our full range of investment services with the highest degree of service and to deliver it in a personalized and effective fashion. For a no-obligation review, call Clark Nyberg at 859-988-1318. That's Clark Nyberg, 859-988-1318. Call Kentucky Bank and call it home. I do.
Hillendale Sales, producing unique results unrivaled at public auction. Hillendale has established four new record prices at public auction, including $14 million for Better Than Honor, and has sold 100 horses for higher than $1 million. Recent Hillendale sales graduates include champions Songbird and Good Magic, along with Preakness Stakes hero Cloud Computing. Learn more at HillendaleFarms.com.
Hi, this is Jockey John Court. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
And they come to the quarter pole. Working in the weeds is Eye of the Leopard. But they come to the top of the way now. Mr. Ferrico's to you. And Mike Smith calls on him for his best. Eye of the Leopard on the outside second. Milwaukee Appeal is third. And Tasty Temptation is fourth. Mr. Ferrico's to you. Eye of the Leopard. And it's those two in a fight to the finish. Who is it going to be? Eye of the Leopard. Queen's Plate perfection. And it was tight for place between Mr. Ferrico's to you and Milwaukee Appeal.
Once again, Dan Loisel with the call. That was the 2009 running of the Queen's Plate. Eye of the Leopard getting up in a thrilling finish. He got the victory that day. He was the fifth winner of the Queen's Plate, campaigned by Samsung Farm. Today, they have two horses going to the post in the 159th running of the race known for the Gallop for the Guineas, and they'll see if they can pull off win number six. And we'll talk more about those horses as we move throughout the second hour of the program. We're going to be joined coming up here in just a few minutes by Rick Balazs, who is the president and general manager of Samsun. We'll talk to him about that history. We'll talk to him about being back here again, trying to win a sixth. Sandy Hawley, who is no stranger to the winner's circle on Queen's Plate Day. He's won the race four times. The Hall of Fame jockey will be with us at 9:20 Eastern time. And then at the end of the program, you're going to hear my one-on-one interview with Frank Stronach from Medina Springs. They have won the race on four different occasions and looking for number five here today. Frank talks about that later in the show. And Mark Cassie, you heard earlier that he has three primary contenders, including the filly Wonder Godot and the morning line favorite Telekinesis. You'll hear from him coming up at the end of the show as well. So, Acacia, a lot of things still to come here in a very busy edition of the Equine Forum.
It certainly is, and great hearing from CEO Jim Lawson about all of just the fun that's going on today, too. And I feel like that's really been a theme of the show. We heard it from John Secora. We've been talking about it, too, that not only is it the historic race and there's just a great racing card and obviously wagering a big part of it, but the whole day, the whole weekend really is a big event and a big party kind of, too, which is really makes it an enjoyable weekend.
All right, we're going to kick things off. Hour number two is next, right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It is Justify in front. Good Magic on the outside tenfold. Bravazo, Justify, he's unstoppable. He won the Preakness.
Audible by three. Hoffberg can't get him. Mississippi is third. Five Florida Derbies for Todd Pletcher. Audible, no doubt about it. He won it by 2.5.
From our Jimmy Johns of Lexington studios, welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Good Magic has been defeated, then Machismo. Less than a 16th to go. The leader is still Promises Fulfilled, and Promises Fulfilled will spring the upset to win the Fountain of Youth under our Router Tees Jr.
Bolt Doro is forging clear. This is a high-caliber colt. We're witnessing the emergence of a star as Bolt Doro treats his rivals to a comprehensive walloping in the front runner.
Now, here's Mike Penna and Acacia Courtney.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Acacia Courtney, the Baron, and I don't know, we don't have a nickname for you
little
yet.
A.
We've
got to
come up with, Little A. There you go. Let's do that.
Isn't that what I am?
Sure. Little A. Sounds good to me.
Okay.
I thought that was only when you were with Anthony.
Oh, I guess. Well, he's the big A all the time.
He is the big A all the time. All right, the Baron and the Little A. Okay.
You call me AC.
Akakia.
Akakia, yeah. Fun story about that. When I was applying for my first apartment a couple years ago, I needed to write down my employer as a reference, and they called Mike about Akakia and her work record. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we were checking the references from Akakia. I said, who the hell is Akakia? Yeah, and I quickly figured out it was Acacia. So many people mispronounce your name anyway.
Oh, yes. Well, Mark Cassie told me yesterday with Wonder Godot, who owner Gary Barber says that is the pronunciation. I guess Godot was one of the top 10 most mispronounced words over the past year, and I said, I understand very, very well how that goes.
Well, Mark Cassie also told me when you were getting ready to do the interview, I walked over just to say hello to him very quickly before you got started. And he said, they asked me who I would rather have stalking me, you or her. And he said, no contest. I don't think it was me.
Well, he was very nice to give some time and talk about all of his horses. He's got a lot running today.
Yeah, he certainly does. And, of course, we have a very busy afternoon coming up, 4 to 6 Eastern, our coverage of the 159th running of the Queen's Plate. You can tune in throughout North America, Sirius XM Channel 93, and stream us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. All that coverage presented by our friends at Hillendale Farms. And you heard from John Secura in the first half of the show. You heard from Jim Lawson here at Woodbine just a short time ago. If you missed any portion of the show, simply head over to our website, horseracingradio.net. A podcast will be available for you to listen to right after 10 o'clock Eastern this morning. So do that, tune in, and check out those interviews at your leisure. Well, a very special guest now, and you know, we told you about the history of the Queen's Plate, and when you think about that history, you have to think about Samsun Farm, because they have been an integral part of what makes the Queen's Plate so special. Their first victory in the race came back in 1988 with Regal Intention, their most recent in 2009 with Eye of the Leopard, and they are here with two chances this year, Strike Me Down and Say the Word, both trained by our good friend Graham Motion. And joining us now is Rick Belaz, who is the president and general manager of that historic organization, Samsun Farm. Rick, appreciate the visit, my friend. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, hi, Mike. How are you today?
Everything is well. Looking forward to this conversation and having you on board. Boy, you think back on that history. Rick, do you kind of just pinch yourself when you go to work at Samsun every day?
Yeah, I do. You know, we're just so fortunate, you know, to be able to carry forward what Ernie Samuel started back in the 70s. And, you know, it some of that even reflects in what we're seeing today with the bloodlines of the horses. You know, it's it never gets old, that's for sure. And you sure don't start to take it for granted. And it's this is probably the most exciting day of the year for everybody, for sure.
Yeah, we've touched on that a couple of times throughout the show, but I'll get your opinion on this too, Rick. When you think about this day and what it means to racing here in the country and really racing in general, what does Queen's Plate Day mean to the sport?
Well, you know, we've won a lot of races all over North America, and, you know, it's always exciting to win. But for, you know, being Canadian and being a Canadian operation that has been around for a long time, it's always, there's always a little bit more energy and excitement for us for Queen's Plate Day. You know, it's a classic, you know, the oldest continuously run horse race in North America, for one thing, which is quite amazing in itself, and close to home. It's our home track at Woodbine, and you know, we've got a lot of friends and relatives in the area that you know, help to get us more nervous and pumped up. So it's a huge day, and I think that's you know, the case for everybody in the Toronto area, that's for sure, and all across Canada. You know, you listen to Jim Lawson talk you know, the other day at the plate breakfast. He was talking about you know, how it is something that should be on every Canadian's bucket list, and I believe that. And you know, I think it's getting more and more exciting every year as time goes by, and you know, Woodbine's doing such a great job of improving everything. So it's certainly getting more and more exciting, and something to look forward to every year.
Now, Rick, you mentioned the home track, the atmosphere of all of your friends and family being close by to Woodbine, and I know that Samsun Farm really is a family operation as well. Tell us a little bit about how everybody is involved in your operation and just kind of how your family has been so involved in Canadian racing for the past few years.
Well, you know, the entire family, it always has been a family thing. You know, I go back to, of course, you know, Ernie was my father-in-law, and my wife, Tammy, ran the operation after he passed away. So we've always been very close to it. But, you know, that my immediate family, you know, myself and my two kids and my current wife, we love to go to the races. But, you know, even extending it out, obviously, my brother-in-law, Mark Samuel, and his sister, Kim, and their kids, you know, everybody in the family is still very interested. And, you know, when you're pulling it through, and you know, now the I guess the third generation of Samsun Farm, when you get the kids involved, that it's hard to keep that kind of momentum. And you know, it seems to be there. I know, you know, my own kids, my son Michael is very, very interested in horse racing. It's a passion for him. And my daughter Lisa, who's not really involved in the game, she's still very, very up on it and interested, and follows it very, very closely. And same with you know, the other older kids in the family. My niece Caitlin, she's very interested in going to the track. And you know, Mark's kids, I think, are coming along. They're quite a bit younger, so you know, we're hoping you know, it'll move on to the next generation. And continue on when you look at, some of the great farms in Canadian racing over the years. A lot of them have gone by the wayside, which is, typical of things going, through a number of generations. It's very difficult to keep the momentum and keep things going. We're hoping to be able to do that and continue to go forward.
Talking with Rick Balazs, who is the president and general manager of Samsun Farm, five-time Queen's Plate winners. They're looking for number six with a couple of entries here today. We'll talk more about those horses coming up in just a minute. Rick, it's interesting listening to you talk about the tradition and the history and how important it is to maintain that focus moving forward. It reminds me of Claiborne Farm in Kentucky and the Hancocks and everything that they have done throughout the year. And generation after generation, the philosophy, the approach still stays the same. Is there a parallel there? Could we say it's kind of the same thing at Samson?
Well, it's certainly a huge compliment to be compared to Claiborne Farm. And I'll accept that compliment. I hope you're right about that. And trying to stay the course, trying to, do the best breeding that we can. Obviously, we breed to race. We're not a real commercial operation, so it's in order to do that, we've got to have great people working for us that help us to be able to go forward, and we do. We've got excellent management, the guys that obviously help me out and guide me to make the right decisions and go in the right direction. I guess that is the case as far as Canada goes. We're probably the closest thing you've got.
Now, Rick, you do have two runners in this year's edition of the Queen's Plate in Say the Word and Strike Me Down, both with Grand Motion. Tell us just a little bit about your two contenders this year, both of whom will be a little bit of a price, but they both look like they're coming into this race very strong.
Yeah, I think they both are. They obviously two very different style of horse. But I think the timing is good for both of them. I think Graham has done an excellent job bringing them along, and hopefully they're going to peak today, one of them at least. I think it'd be great if we could be 1-2 or a dead heat for a win. That'd be nice, but I don't think that's going to happen. Both very good horses. I think raw talent-wise, as Graham has probably said, Strike Me Down is probably the stronger of the two. But so many variables, obviously. I think our post positions for both of them are pretty decent. It'll be interesting to see how this heat that we're supposed to have today affects both of these horses. It may play a little bit more towards Say the Word. He may, hold back a little bit and, save it till the end. We'll see what happens with Strike Me Down. He has tended to be a little bit more nervous. He has not been gelded, and so he's got, certainly got a little bit more energy, and he's a little more precocious. Hopefully he can keep his head together, and if we can get him up there and he can keep his head in the game, I think we've got a really good shot with him. I'm really excited about both of these guys because they've both got the right stuff to make it in this race, albeit different styles. And I think the timing is right. They're both relatively well rested, which I think is important going into this race, especially if we're going to have this hot day. They're talking about it being in the 90s. So it's we'll wait and see. I don't like to predict, and I get a little bit superstitious about getting too confident, but I'm as confident as I could be that we've got the best shot with both of these guys.
Rick, those five Queen's Plate victories by Samsun Farm have you tied with historic Kinghaven Farms, and you're still, both of you, still two behind Winfield's Farm. Have you allowed yourself to think about what it might be like to add a sixth Queens Plate victory to the resume later this afternoon?
I think about it all the time. And yeah, it would be great. And you know, it would just be an amazing thing. You know, we haven't the last plate that we won was 9 years ago, and we've had a lot of very close close calls where, you know, we've had close seconds and such. And you know, it is a game of inches, and we're definitely going to need some racing luck today, and you know, get good trips. And to be able to add a sixth Queen's Plate trophy would be fantastic. And you know, if we were ever to be lucky enough, it would be nice to continue on and you know, keep adding Queen's Plates. I think you've got to stick with it, and you know, obviously, it's a big investment for us, both financially and emotionally. So, you know, we try very hard to, this is you know, what we're in this for in farm is to win races, and especially to try to win races like the plate.
Well, Rick, Keisha and I got a sense of that history, the Queen's Plate history, the Samsung history yesterday when we stopped by Catherine Day Phillips' barn, which is now, she's now in the barn of her father, Jim Day, who trained Samson's first Queen's Plate winner, Regal Intention, back in 1988. There is a Samson tack box that is right outside her office there in the shed row, and it just reminds you of the history and you know, really everything that, that Samson has represented to Canada and to this particular race.
Yeah, it is really great to think about it. I mean, Jimmy was a huge part of the early success of Sam. You know, he was quite a character, too. I still hear from him from time to time, and, you know, I haven't, not too recently, but I hope he's doing well. And you know, I think Catherine obviously inherited some of Jimmy's racing genes, and she's a phenomenal trainer, too. So, there's a lot of, when you talk to people about racing in Canada and even in the U.S., there's a lot of our history that kind of percolates down through a lot of different operations and, you know, different people that have come through Samson over the years. So that's really nice to see the impact that we've had on the industry, you know, not just what Samson has done, but on the industry itself. It's always very gratifying to see that.
Rick Belez, he is the president and general manager of Samson. He's with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Rick, appreciate the visit. All the best this afternoon, and good luck trying to get that sixth plate victory.
Thank you very much to both of you.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
And again, you'll hear that coverage coming up with us this afternoon, 4 to 6 Eastern Time, presented by Hillendale Farms. And you can tune in Sirius XM 93 and stream us worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley has won the Queen's Plate four times. He's in the on-deck circle. He'll join us after our next commercial break. You're also going to hear our interview with Frank Stronach and my one-on-one with Mark Cassie. So stay tuned for those coming up as we move toward 10 o'clock Eastern time this morning. Hey, don't forget to pre-order your Justify commemorative Triple Crown Collector's Issue today. You can do that at Bloodhorse. Bloodhorse Publishing, a 248-page full-color publication with Chronicles Justifies and his connections, his journey to becoming the 13th Triple Crown winner. Yeah, it's pretty cool. There are also stories and dozens of spectacular photographs of Justify and the other 12 Triple Crown winners. A limited number will be printed, so pre-order yours today at shop.bloodhorse.com. We'll get to a break. We'll come back and visit with Sandy Hawley. That's next on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Did you know since 1998, 236 Ellis Park race horses have won at least one graded race? 102 horses that ran at Ellis went on to finish in the top three of a grade one event, while 37 of those were grade one winners. Groupie Doll and Run Happy raced at Ellis and later won grade one Breeders' Cup sprint races. Keen Ice began his career at Ellis Park and would later on defeat American Pharoah in the grade one Travers. Record purses, a new expanded stakes program, and $42,000 pots for Kentucky bred maidens make Ellis Park the best place to develop your future champions.
Airdrie Studs Summer Front, a gorgeous millionaire son of the Great War Front, has wasted no time in establishing himself as a major force in the commercial marketplace. Known on the racetrack for his electric turn of foot, Summer Front's first crop weanlings averaged over $100,000 with a sensational $100,000 median at the Keeneland November sale, all from an initial stud fee of just $10,000. Airdrie Studs Summer Front. Think about it.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
Lexus. Once driven, there's no going back. Through inspired design, relentless innovation, and uninhibited performance, Lexus continues their pursuit to perfection with not only precisely engineered automobiles, but powerful, profound, and passionate experiences that move you like never before. Hey everyone, Mike Pena here, and extremely proud to say that I am a Lexus owner, or better yet, a member of the Lexus family at the Lexus store of Lexington. I've told you for more than a decade that the people make the difference at the Lexus store, and that is why I am so proud to be their customer and a member of their family. If you're in the horse business, there's no reason to look anywhere else. As the sponsor of the Grade 2 Lexus Raven Run at Keeneland every fall, the team at the Lexus store of Lexington is committed to supporting the horse industry and to being the dealership of the equine industry here in Central Kentucky. See for yourself. Stop in and talk horse racing with the godfather, Tony Attiano, and all the great folks at the Lexus store of Lexington. And I promise you will love your Lexus experience.
This is Eddie Delahousie. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
As they come over to the quarter pole, and it becomes a test of courage in the final quarter mile. And here comes Lexi Lou, and We Miss Artie is closing on the outside. Lexi Lou, asserting bear. We Miss Artie, diving inside, is Amise Holiday. And Lexi Lou has taken the lead. They are in the last 16th of a mile. The filly was fabulous this afternoon. Lexi Lou wins the 155th running of the Queen's Plate. Amise Holiday was second, and Asserting Bear was third.
Welcome back to Woodbine and the Equine Forum here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Acacia Courtney, trackside, getting ready for the 159th running of the Queen's Plate this afternoon. Dan Loisel had the call of the 2014 running, and Lexi Lou, one of 36 fillies to capture the gallop for the Guineas. She was trained by Mark Cassie, who is back this year with three entrants and three really good horses, and maybe his best chance to win a second Queen's Plate. You're going to hear from Mark coming up in our next segment, but we now turn our attention to a man who is no stranger to the Queen's Plate winner circle. He is Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley, who won the race four times in the 1970s. His first in 1970, his most recent 1978, and he's with us now here on HRRN. Sandy, appreciate the time, my friend.
Hey, Mike, my pleasure. Keisha, great to be on with you.
Happy Queen's Plate Day.
Happy Queen's Plate Day, and actually tomorrow, happy Canada Day.
That's right. Happy Canada Day to you, my friend. It's going to be a special weekend here in the country and, of course, here in Toronto with the Queen's Plate today and Canada Day tomorrow. There will be fireworks. We've seen concerts. Brad Paisley was here last night. It's just a really special time to be a racing fan in Canada, isn't it, Sandy?
Well, you know what? It really is. Nothing like the Queen's Plate. It's like our Kentucky Derby of the United States. And, of course, Sam Roberts' band plays later on after the Queen's Plate tonight. So you're really trying to attract a lot of younger fans, and it should be a fabulous day.
Sandy, when you think back on that Hall of Fame career and those four wins in the Queen's Plate, is there maybe one or two of those four that stick out to you more than a couple?
You know what? They were all fantastic. You know, I remember winning. I just had lost the bug, and I won on a horse called Almoner back in 1970, 71. Kennedy Road, who was a tremendous horse, went down to the United States and Of course, the great Bill Shoemaker rode him and won a few stakes at Santa Anita with him in California. L'Angeleur, he actually won the Laurel Futurity and then went into the Queen's Plate. He was an amazing horse as well. But maybe probably the most special one, Mike, was probably my last one, and it was 1978 on a horse called Regal Embrace. And when I thought about becoming a jockey, I knew nothing about horses. I went to Winfield Farms in Oshawa. It was owned by the great E.P. Taylor. And 12 years later, he owned Regal Embrace. And here I am in the winner's circle now with the greatest owner of all time in Canada, the great E.P. Taylor, and winning the Queen's Plate. That was definitely my biggest thrill at Woodbine.
Wow, that is pretty amazing. And Sandy, from a rider's perspective, I'm always curious of what's going through your mind when you're coming down to the wire. It's Queen's Plate day. What is going through your mind when you know you're going to win that race?
You know what? It's amazing. Yeah, it's almost like you get goosebumps thinking about it, but you still have your job at hand. It's never over till you get to that wire, but it is an absolutely amazing feeling. Of course, as you see so many jockeys when they cross the wire, you know, Mike Smith, not too long ago, when in the Kentucky Derby, you just stand up, put your arm in the air, and it's just a feeling that, you know, it's absolutely hard to describe. And, you know, people ask, you know, what is the thing that you miss about horse racing? And you know what? It's being in the winner's circle, you know, feeling that you've won this big race and everybody is happy. You know, the groom, the exercise boy, the owner, the trainer. It's just an amazing feeling and, you know, a feeling of accomplishment as well.
Sandy, I know this is a different surface here now, with it being a Tapeta surface, an artificial racing surface that they'll contest the Queen's Plate over later today. So it's a different surface than what you competed on here in the 1970s. But the distance, the mile and a quarter, what's the key to for a jockey to be successful going a mile and a quarter here at Woodbine?
Well, you know, Mike, you know, none of these horses have been this far before, and it's very important to get a horse that will relax. You have a horse that's very nervous and very tense, and there's going to be a big crowd out there as well. To handle the crowd, to be relaxed in the race, and, you know, for the jockey to be able to do his thing and be able to pace the horse properly, you don't want a horse that's fighting the bit right up front and, you know, trying to run off with you going a mile and a quarter. You just need one that's cool, calm, and relaxed. And I like horses that lay just off the pace. You don't get in as much trouble coming from off the pace. And, you know, just to be able to sit off the leaders. Not very often you get a horse go wire to wire going a mile and a quarter.
Definitely a strenuous distance and a big field this year with a field of 16. And now we're talking about tactics. Whether you're drawn inside or outside, tactically speaking, how do you think the post really affects horses? I imagine the break is so important in this kind of race.
Well, the good thing, Akisha, is that you have a over a quarter of a mile to run to get to the first turn. They start up in the chute, and they come all the way down the stretch, so you have a fair amount of time to get your position, whether you're inside or outside. I'd rather have actually the 14, 15, or 16 hole than the 1, 2, 3 hole, because as you know, sometimes you can get kind of jammed down in there, and everybody is kind of trying to fold over to get their position, so it's sometimes like a chain reaction where you could get squeezed out. So I'd rather have an outside post rather than an inside post. But like I say, you have over a quarter of a mile before you get to that first turn.
Sandy, I've talked to so many riders prior to a race like the Kentucky Derby, and so many of them have told me that you need a horse. If you're going to be successful, you need a horse that can make two or three different moves in the race and then be able to settle again after each of those moves so that you can get into position and where you need to be throughout the running of the race. Same thing here in the Queen's Plate?
Yeah, you're exactly right, Mike, because, you know, sometimes you get your position early, and then all of a sudden down the backstretch, you know, maybe somebody is coming to you, and, you know, you don't want to lose your position. So, of course, you have to use your horse a little bit to keep that position, and then you try and give him a breather again, and then try and make that final move down the stretch. So, yeah, you need a horse that's very versatile. That's why I like to be up fairly close to the pace. You know, sometimes if you're in the clear and you're all by yourself, that's the best scenario because they are young horses. They are three-year-olds. And if you have pressure from the outside, you know, horses that aren't used to that, you know, they may just all of a sudden just give up on you. So I'd like to try and be in the clear, and it would be great if you're laying fourth or fifth and you're all by yourself and be able to make that move. But it's going to be an interesting race. As you mentioned, there's 16 horses in there, and there's at least 10 horses. If they won, you would say, oh, yeah, that horse had the credentials to win. You know, there's some horses that, you know, they haven't done a whole lot in their careers, but just being the Queen's Plate is very exciting. And the horses can't read the odds board, so you may have a 40 or 50 one shot come in.
Well, you mentioned just being in the Queen's Plate, Sandy, and we've heard this a lot. It's amazing to win the Queen's Plate, but for many, just being part of this prestigious race is a big deal. Tell us just a little bit about, I mean, you've won it four times, but what is it like just to be involved in this race day?
You know what? It is tremendous. It's nerve-wracking because when you go out there, you just, all you want is you want to have a clean race. You don't want to make any mistakes as a rider. You don't want it to be your fault that, you know, the horse didn't get there first or finish in the money. You just want a nice, clean race, and if the horse runs his race and you've done all you can to win the race and you don't win, then you're fine with that. But the nervous part is just trying not to make any mistakes out there. But the Queen's Plate, you know, royalty has been here so many times. The Queen's been here, the Queen Mother. It's just tremendous, of course, this year. The Honorable Lieutenant Governor of Ontario, Elizabeth Dodswell, will be here this year to represent royalty. And it's just a race where, you know, it has that prestige to it. And I remember the Queen was here one year, and a horse called Royal Chocolate won the race. And that actually was a pretty good hunch bet because the track was sloppy, and we had dirt back then. So Royal Chocolate, why would you not bet on that horse? But so it was. It's always just, I think I finished fifth or sixth in the race that year. And you're right, Keisha, it's just exciting just to be in the race.
Sandy, is there? We talked about the four that you won. Is there one or two editions of the Queen's Plate that you'd like to have back where you said, man, I could have had that one too?
Well, yeah, there has been times where when I finished third, and you know, I won four, but the closest I got after that was finishing third a couple times, and oh yeah, sometimes you wish you had them back. But you know, at the same time, I can't really remember, Mike, looking back and thinking that, wow, I got in trouble in that race in the Queen's Plate. You know, sometimes you just don't have the horse and a better horse beat you. But I think throughout riding all the Queen's Plates, I've been pretty lucky. Not really thought to myself, oh, I should have won that race. And that would be a terrible feeling, especially in the Queen's Plate.
Earlier you mentioned that Queen's Plate Day can be nerve-wracking if you're competing in the race. What advice would you give to the riders today on preparing to ride the Queen's Plate as they move throughout the afternoon?
Well, you know what, Mike, it's usually good if you have like 5 or 6 or 7 mounts before the Queen's Plate, because that kind of keeps your mind off the race. But if you're sitting in there like some of the U.S. riders, we actually have 6 U.S. riders coming in to ride the Queen's Plate, so that's how important this race is. If you're sitting there all day thinking about the race and you know, strategy on how to ride the race and everything, it's really hard to do, but you just try and pretend like it's any regular race. But, of course, when you get out there, it's a little bit nerve-wracking. And I know I've ridden in 6 Kentucky Derbies, and anytime you hear Old Kentucky Home, even as a rider, you know, you get the emotion, the tears in your eyes, and it's just a great feeling, great emotions, especially in the Queen's Plate as well.
He's Hall of Fame jockey Sandy Hawley here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Sandy, before we let you go, you had a chance to stop by Canterbury Park this past week and spend some time with our good friend Barry Pearl and the folks who put together Jockeys in Jeans. That's a fundraising event for the PDJF, which is our official charity here on the network. Tell me about that. Things seem to go pretty well.
You know what? It was a fantastic time. Canterbury Park put on a great show for us. They were amazing. And, of course, Barry Pearl, he's our president, and he did an amazing job as well. And Randy Sampson, who is general manager, and his family owns Canterbury Park, they, you know what? They did an amazing job. He is the CEO of Canterbury Park, amazing guy. They did a tremendous job. We had a lot of fun and raised $280,000, and I think we went over the $1 million mark. And Barry Pearl does a tremendous job. Of course, everybody that's involved with Jockeys and Jeans is for a great cause, and we had a great time as well.
Wow, tremendous. Well done. Sandy, we'll let you go. Enjoy Queen's Plate Day. We'll look forward to catching up with you later on this afternoon as part of our broadcast, which begins at 4 Eastern. We'll see you out here later today.
Yes, I look forward to it. And can I put a plug in for our new turf course, which is going to open next June? We have a turf course that's a mile and a half on the outside of the main track, which is very unique. But we are building a new turf course on the inside here at Woodbine. So it should be fantastic. And we might have like six or seven races a day, and that would be absolutely amazing. So anybody around North America that has a horse that loves the turf, it's going to be a fantastic turf course on the inside of the main track, plus the outside turf course. So, and I look forward to being on the show with you guys later on this afternoon.
Good stuff, Sandy Hawley. Appreciate it, my friend. We'll see you out here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Hey. Thanks, Sandy.
How good is that guy?
Awesome.
Just tremendous.
And when he was telling his first story about his most recent winner in 1978, his last winner, about how it all came full circle as he was standing there in the winner's circle with just such prominent people in racing. And there he was riding his fourth Queen's Plate winner.
A really cool story. Really cool story. All right, we're going to get to a break. We'll come back. You're going to hear my one-on-one interview with Frank Stronach, and you will hear the interview that I did earlier this week with Mark Cassie talking about his three contenders and trying to win a second Queen's Plate. Stay with us. That's all ahead on the Equine Forum on HRRN, your home for the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Castleton Lions is home to blue blood sprinter Justin Phillip and multiple Eclipse champion Gio Ponti. Justin Phillip is among North America's leading second crop sires, represented by the exciting graded stakes place filly Safe to Say and stakes place runners Justaholic, Blushing Justine, and Upset Brewing in 2018. Justin Phillip is also the sire of What a Catch, winner of last year's Rockville Center Stakes at 2. Seven-time grade one winner Gio Ponti continues to prove his offspring can run on any surface at any distance. The sire of Eclipse champion and Breeders' Cup sprint winner, Dre Fong.
Dre Fong pulls clear of Masochistic. Mind Your Biscuits finishing with a flourish, but Dre Fong's the leader. Dre Fong has won.
Canadian classic hero, Sir Dudley Diggs.
Sir Dudley Diggs has won the Queen's Plate.
And marathon specialist, Runtime.
But Runtime, motors on the outside.
Justin Phillip and Gio Ponti standing at Castleton Lions. Visit CastletonLions.com.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
New Money Honey is now two lengths behind her. Diana Taylor's third on the inside. Special event trying to fend off New Money Honey, but she's coming, and she's coming quickly, and New Money Honey is going to do it. New Money Honey comes back a winner over special event.
New Money Honey, the multiple grade one winner and daughter of Darley stallion Medaglia d'Oro, made her four-year-old debut a winning one this past week at Belmont Park, making her your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley stallion Medaglia d'Oro was North America's leading sire by grade one winners last year with seven, a list that includes New Money Honey. The only other American stallions to have had as many grade one winners in a single year are Mr. Prospector, Danzig, and Stormcat. To learn more about Medaglia d'Oro and all the Darley stallions, visit DarleyAmerica.com.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. This freaky fast performance is brought to you by your Lexington, Kentucky area Jimmy Johns.
Better inside the 3/8 pole, Sloan Ranger, and here it comes, Ericool on the outside. Cowboy Cop is right there, and Awesome Again is gaining ground as well as they hit the quarter pole on the Queen's Plate. Ericool, Awesome Again, responding to the call of Mike Smith on the outside of Ericool. And it's Awesome Again on the outside who punches to the front. Ericool down on the inside, second. Cowboy Cop is third. Crypto Poser is fourth. But it's 2-8 and not enough as they come to the final 16th. It's Awesome Again holding on. Gamely
Nelson again would not be denied his place in history. He wins the Queen's Plate.
That was Dan Loisel with the call of the 1997 Queen's Plate to the great Awesome Again. Who knew how good he would turn out to be? Boy, he was special. He was the second of four Queen's Plate winners for owner Frank Stronach, his Stronach Racing in Edina Springs. Of course, Awesome Again standing in Edina Springs in Kentucky now. And earlier I had the chance to catch up with Frank and talk to him about being part of this entire experience here at the Queen's Plate. And he started by looking back on that first one. Frank, when you hear the words Frank Stronach, four-time Queen's Plate winner, what are some of the things that come to mind?
Well, it doesn't matter how smart you are, how rich you are. You gotta have some luck. Without that, things won't function. But as you know, we had a great philosopher in Canada, a fellow called Stephen Leacock. One of his favorite sayings always was, "I'm a great believer in luck. The harder you work, the more luck you have." Yes, I put a lot of effort in. I put a lot of money in, and I put a lot of love in it.
What do you remember about that first Queen's Plate victory back in 1994 with Baskian?
Well, I was relative. I wasn't in that long yet, and what a coincidence. Baskian just died a few days ago, and we have down there, and we had him in our retirement section down in Florida, and he gets a stately funeral.
Well, good for him. He should get a stately funeral. You know, your second Queen's Plate victory would come 3 years later with the great Awesome Again, and then you had to wait 18 years for another Queen's Plate win with Shaman
yes.
Ghost. What makes this race so challenging to win, Frank?
Well, it I've been so busy with so many other things, I did not maybe pay that close of attention. And then we breed more to distance horses, you know, they mature a little later. But we don't race our two-year-olds too much. They get two or three starts, and so you got to be relative fit, right? And in June or early July to race a mile and a quarter.
When you think back on everything that you've accomplished in the sport, what are you most proud of?
Well, it's naturally when you read the Breeders' Cup Classic, which I won some, and I won the Preakness, I won the Belmont. I mean, those, and naturally the Queen's Plate, because the Queen's Plate is really, it's home, right? We are, we have a farm not too far away, and the staff goes there, and there is, so the Queen's Plate is always special.
Frank, when everything is said and done, and you finally step away from the game in whatever fashion, how will the Frank Stronach legacy be defined with racing? How do you hope it's defined?
I guess on my tombstone, maybe one of those days they would say, he made a great contribution to horse racing, and he was a nice person.
Yeah, and a true love for the game. Winning a fifth Queen's Plate this year would be what?
Well, we have one horse, but he isn't gone a distance yet, so it's a thing. The other horse got great breeding. It seems he wants to go a little further. But this is, look, sometimes I had a favorite and didn't wind up any place. Sometimes you have a, that's what makes racing so great, right? To win this time, I would have to be extra lucky.
Well, that's Frank Stronach. He'll have to be a little extra lucky here today. He's been lucky on several occasions throughout that brilliant career. And, Acacia, you heard him talk about what it takes to win the Queen's Plate. It takes a horse that's coming in here correctly. It takes a horse that is fresh and fit and ready to go that mile and a quarter today, much like we see in the Kentucky Derby.
Absolutely, and we talked about this with Sandy, that it's a taxing distance. They are still three-year-olds, a lot of them still very inexperienced, and even Stronach Stables in today with Real Dude, who is still a maiden, and then you also have Silent Poet, but hey, you got to be in it to win it, right?
Yeah, you do, and he's won plenty of these. We'll see if he can do it again, and it'd be a bit of a shocker, but we'll see if he can pull it off again. Good luck to Frank Stronach and the team later today. Well, Mark Cassie is loaded in this year's Queen's Plate. He has three horses, and he's looking for a second victory in the race. It would mean a lot to him, but he started that interview that I did with him earlier this week by looking back on his first and only Queen's Plate victory in 2014 with the filly, Lexi Lou.
It was, you know, it was just an unbelievable day. I'll never forget it. I'll never forget the call. It was definitely one of the highlights of my career, to win the Queen's Plate, which it's not been easy for us to win, and then to win it with a filly, and then to win it for Gary Barber, who is definitely one of our biggest and best clients. So it was just and to win it with a filly, I remember the next day, she was pretty well on the front of every newspaper or sports page. And it was a big deal.
Why is the Queen's Plate so challenging to win, Mark?
It's a good question. I'm not sure I have the answer for that. You know, I don't know why it's been so tough. I mean, I've went into it before thinking that I had a good shot and just, you know, wasn't able to get it done. I would say this is the strongest hand we've ever brought to the Queen's Plate, though, this year.
Well, and you do have another filly with Wonder Godot, the 2-year-old Canadian champion filly from a year ago. How about fillies? Why have they been so successful in the Queen's Plate?
Well, they've been successful, Mike, recently, because I don't know if it was 7 or 8 years ago that Woodbine decided to move the race 3 weeks apart. It used to only be 2 weeks apart, so it was very difficult from the Oaks. So it would be very difficult to run your filly in the Oaks and then come back 2 weeks later for the Queen's Plate. They decided, like I said, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago, that they would separate them by 3 weeks. And by doing that, you've seen a lot more fillies win. I think if you had a similar situation, say in Kentucky, say, obviously you can't do it because of the meet, but if you ran the Kentucky Oaks 3 weeks out or 4 weeks out from the Kentucky Derby, that you would see a lot more fillies competing in the Kentucky Derby, and then they would be successful. I think too much is put on fillies against colts. I mean, we see it happen all the time in Europe. You know, we did it, you know, Teppan, she beat up on the boys on more than one occasion, as did Catch a Glimpse. So a lot of it has to do with timing and opportunity, so you don't see it as much in the U.S.
What is it about Wonder Godot that...
Or in North America, I should say. Yeah, North America.
Yeah, yeah. What is it about Wonder Godot, Mark, that makes you feel like she stacks up with the top Canadian males?
I know she... I mean, there's without a doubt she does. Her numbers show that she loves the synthetic track, and... If there's a horse out there that wants a mile and a quarter, it's her. She always is running on in and always galloping out really strong. And she's just a big brute. She is definitely Wonder Woman.
Did you feel that same way about Lexi Lou coming in 2014?
No, I had my guy. You know, Lexi Lou had won the Oaks and she had done it impressively. But honestly, I never thought that Lexi Lou, she turned out to be, but that she was as good as I thought, you know, Wonder Godot is, and or Godot. We call her, she has so many different, we call her, I can have a conversation, call her three different names in that conversation. But, Wonder Godot was barely beaten in the Kentucky Oaks, which just speaks volumes for her. And so I probably have more faith in her than I do Lexi Lou.
Is she the main danger to Telekinesis?
I would say so, but it would not shock me at all for Nippawaw to win. Nippawaw is by Scat Daddy, and up there in itself says volumes. He's another horse that wants a mile and a quarter. You know, it starts at 2, Mike. When we get these young horses, our goals are always, you know, the Kentucky Derby, the Queen's Plate. Pretty well everything we do is aimed at trying to get to that goal. And definitely, you know, with Chiefswood, them, you know, being Canadians, the Queen's Plate is extra special for them. And so I've kind of always had that on my radar for Nippawa. Now, he's been fairly unlucky in a few of his races. His ability is much better than what his record shows.
Talk to me, Mark, about your approach to preparing a horse for the Queen's Plate as opposed to the way you go about getting a horse ready to compete in the Kentucky Derby.
Well, they're similar, really. Most of my preparation and what I do is more in the morning. You know, we always are trying to teach our horses to rate. You'll very seldom see us win even with, you know, a first-time starter with a horse that just goes to the lead. We're always trying, and that's why we don't win more first time. It's always nice to win first time out, but it's not our goal. Our goal is to get experience. You know, my theory is this. When you have a horse that always needs to lead, there's going to be somebody gunning for you, or there's always you're going to come across horses that are faster than you. They may not be better than you, but they're faster than you. So you have to learn to adapt to all that. And no better place to learn to adapt and get those experience in maiden races. Isn't it better to get your experience in a maiden race or allowance race than, say, the Queen's Plate? So all these three horses all have experience. The one horse that, you know, lacks a little bit, obviously, is Telekinesis. But you can see where in his first start, we let him settle and come with a run. And even in his second start, when he ran against older horses, we tried to get him to settle. He was a little anxious early on. So that's always our goal, no matter what. Anytime I start training a horse, I feel like they're going to win the next Breeders' Cup or they're going to win the next Kentucky Derby. And until they prove otherwise, that's the way we do things.
With all the success that you've had in Canada, and you've won so many races, you're, what, 9 or 10 times Sovereign Award winner as the leading trainer in the country. A lot of people, I think, mistake you for being Canadian. That's not the case.
I had that conversation today. They're kind of talking about the Canadian trainers and then the American trainers. And they said, where do you sit? You sit somewhere in the middle. And I said, it's funny because you say that. Whenever I'm in the U.S., and maybe not so much anymore, but when I would go there, everybody looked at me as being Woodbine in Canada. And then, of course, when I'm in Woodbine in Canada, they all look at me as being an American. So I'm kind of a man without a country. So I kind of look in between. I'm very proud of what we've been able to accomplish in Canada and at Woodbine. And I feel like when I go to the U.S., I represent Woodbine in Canada. And that means a lot to me. But I also am American, and that's very important to me. So it's a nice situation to have. But, yes, you're 100% right. I would say if you polled 100 people and asked them, they would probably 85% would think I'm Canadian.
How about the day that you were inducted into the Canadian Hall of Fame in 2016? That must have been another extremely proud moment for you.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when I started training at the, I started at 17. I can remember, you know, my dad telling me, gave me a few things, and I often reflect upon that. But if you had told me that we would be able to accomplish what we've been able to do, I don't know that I would believe you that it could have been done. And we still have a few goals out there that we still need to conquer, and we're not going to give up until we get them.
Well, Mark, good luck on Saturday. Go get that second Queen's Plate. I know one thing. I'll be cheering, my friend.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right, Mark Cassie joining me earlier this week, and some great things there. And you heard him very candidly say he occasionally never thought that a lot of this would be possible when he first started. And here he is in a position of being a Canadian Hall of Famer, looking for a second Queen's Plate victory and having won countless graded stakes races all over the world. Quite
really,
a ride.
It really is amazing. And one of the things I spoke to him the other day about is that he has horses all over the place, that are being successful all over the place as well. And I know it is very special for him having a mainstream based here and training at Woodbine and getting ready for such a prestigious race as the Queen's Plate, and not only having those three horses in there, but a lot of horses on the undercard as well. So it should be a very busy day for trainer Mark Cassie.
All right, and again, post time for this afternoon's Queen's Plate is 5:36 Eastern. Our coverage 4 to 6 Eastern time on Sirius XM 93. And streaming us, you can stream us worldwide on our website at horseracingradio.net. Time now for your KTA KTOB spotlight, shining the spotlight on Kentucky breds. And who else, who better to do it than Justify? With his dominant victory in the Belmont Stakes, the final jewel of the Triple Crown, Justify remained undefeated and joins the ranks as the 10th Triple Crown winner bred in Kentucky. Justify completed the sweep of the Kentucky Derby, Preakness, and Belmont Stakes to keep his record unblemished, following in the hoof prints of fellow Kentucky bred Seattle Slough, who took the crown undefeated in 1977. Not only are 10 of the 13 Triple Crown winners Kentucky breds, Kentucky leads all other states combined in number and percentage of stakes winners produced in the U.S. Additionally, the Kentucky breds have had great success across the globe with some 70 wins or placings in Group 1 races, and group races, I should say, in Japan, Ireland, France, England, the UAE, Australia, and Hong Kong. Kentucky breds are a force wherever they race, so unlike most state bred programs, Kentucky bred group winners are eligible to receive breeder awards worldwide. For more information, simply visit KentuckyBred.org. We'll get to one final break. We'll come back and wrap it up. From Woodbine, this is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
Horse of the World, Flincher.
Flincher comes to the United States and wins the Woodford Reserve Manhattan by 2.5 lengths.
An Eclipse Champion Turf male and 5-time Grade 1 winner of more than $9.5 million. Flincher's brilliant victory in the Manhattan saw him record a final half-mile time of 44.56. Flincher, standing at Hillendale.
Mastery retired undefeated, winning his 4 starts by a combined 20 lengths. A 6-figure September sale purchase, he won impressively in his 2-year-old debut at Santa Anita. From there, he captured the Grade 3 Bob Hope Stakes and completed his juvenile campaign with a dominant performance in the Grade 1 Los Alamitos Futurity. At 3, the top-rated son of Candy Ride sizzled in the San Felipe, running a 105 buyer and winning by open lengths. Mastery, new for 2018 at Claiborne Farm.
Freak yeah, welcome to Jimmy John's.
Freak yeah, whoa, she's going to slice town on that lettuce.
Freak yeah, she's a fresh lettuce freak. Slices it fresh every day at exactly 3/32 of an inch.
Freak yeah, wait, now she's carving meats?
Freak yeah, she's also a meat freak. Slices are all natural meats by hand daily.
Freak yeah. Freak, you gotta be kidding me.
Freak yeah, also a bread freak. Makes bread fresh in store every 4 hours.
Freak, wow.
Here's the best part, we're all lettuce, meat, and bread freaks here. Because that means better sandwiches for all.
Double freak wow. You guys are freaking my freak.
Freaky fresh, freaky fast. Jimmy John's, freak yeah.
Power.
Royal Delta, my Miss Aurelia, here is a champion again! Royal Delta has won the Breeders' Cup Ladies Classic.
Passion.
Pioneer of the Nile, fully stretched and keeping Chocolate Candy at bay. And Pioneer of the Nile and Garrett Bowers have won the Santa Anita Derby.
Performance.
She wins it. Amaliant for Mike Smith with a huge run in this Grade 1.
Gainsway Stallion Empire Maker is back in the USA with his first U.S. crop of yearlings coming to market this year. A champion on the racetrack, Empire Maker won both the Florida Derby and Belmont Stakes on his way to earning nearly $2 million. Now a highly influential sire and producer of 11 Grade 1 winners, including Pioneer of the Nile and Bodemeister, along with 4-time Grade 1 winner Emollient and 3-time Eclipse champion Royal Delta. Empire Maker, standing at Gainesway.
Power, passion, performance. You know I'm talking about Gainesway Farm.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
Just a little over a minute to wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum. Want to say thank you to all of our special guests for being with us here this morning, including John Sukura from Hillendale, the sponsor of our coverage of the Queen's Plate this afternoon, Jim Lawson from Woodbine Entertainment, Rick Belaz from Samsung Farm, Sandy Hawley, the Hall of Fame jockey, Frank Stronach, and Mark Cassie for their time as well. If you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, to podcast available to listen to at your leisure. And be sure to join us this afternoon for Eastern as we kick off coverage of the 159th Queen's Plate. If you are just tuning in here for some reason, hey, Sirius XM 93 is your home for that, and worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Been a fun morning, AC.
It really has. We heard from a lot of people in a lot of different aspects of the game, and really looking forward to experiencing my first Queen's Plate and doing it here with Horse Racing Radio Network.
Special, special day. Happy to have you on board. Looking forward to getting our colleague Jerry Olguin in the mix later today, too. Somebody who's ridden 2,000 races. He's ridden in 4 Queen's Plates. He'll be part of our team, too.
He's been there, done that, and really looking forward to hearing his take and from a rider's perspective. I think he really brings a really interesting viewpoint, and he'll be joining us this afternoon, and I'm looking forward to running all over the place.
All right. Well, there you go. Our thanks to our producer, Lee Della Pina, and our Jimmy Johns of Lexington Studio. For Sean C., for Acacia Courtney, I'm Mike Penna. Go Steelers, eh?